Now on Racing Pulse, RSN's racing editor, Matt Stewart.
They had to protect the Melbourne Cup. Who's to say the punters will continue to have faith that the Cox Plate could be run with a vaxxed crowd?
For more news, opinion and selections, head to rsn.net.au.
Time to catch up with RSN's racing editor. Make sure you check out all of Maddie's articles each and every day, all the tips, our new website, which is up and running, rsn.net.au, all the podcasts, the downloads, the tips and the news that you want is in the one-stop shop. Also, we'll be having a chat with Greg Carpenter coming up very soon. A lot to discuss, Maddie Stewart. Morning, Maddie. What was your reaction to the Racing Victoria announcement and listening to Giles Thompson this morning?
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? Obviously, the announcement is the racing industry sort of, as Giles Thompson said, it's sort of leading the way with this. And with that comes not risk as much as, you know, testing of the water with how these things stand up. And I think what you pointed out to him of the respondees to the survey, the 8% who have no desire of the 25,000 participants to get vaccinated. And as you say, at the moment, unless that number comes down with liaison with the industry and all sorts of things, that represents about 2,300 people who are employed by the industry, who under these new regulations will find themselves not in adherence with this regulation when it is fully imposed on Zipping Classic Day. And I've spoken to a lot of trainers I know, two or three trainers I know who have staff who are somewhere between ambivalent and anti-vaxxers. I spoke to the Jockeys Association today about their 170 members, there's probably 6 to 10 who are somewhere between ambivalent and staunchly anti-vaccination. So what does this mean for them? I have spoken to, I've sought some legal advice this morning about the situation that trainers might find themselves in, say, with staff who don't want to get vaccinated. If my understanding is if the trainer is in the process of employing a staff member, they can impose a no vax, no employment stipulation. But the tricky bit is for staff who are already employed, who are anti-vax, who would require a change of legislation in order for the trainer to be able to implement some sort of stable rule regarding having vaccinated only staff. So that the legal source I spoke to said he expects that to be factored into the roadmap protocols and the makeup of the roadmap when it's announced by the state government on Sunday, that potential issue might be resolved by a change of legislation, potentially. So, but it was interesting hearing Giles talk about, you know, what are you going to do with staff who refuse to vaccinate? And I think it was probably with an eye to legal advice about where we'll try and work through with the staff and create a safe environment and all that sort of stuff. But ultimately, it's going to come down to what happens to staff who are staunchly against vaccination, say, in 2 or 3 weeks' time when this starts to be implemented.
And I think, as I mentioned before, this is going to be the start of what general society is like from listening to the tone of press conferences that if you want to go out for to the pub, to dinner, to movies, other venues, you are going to need to have a vaccination passport. So it will be probably a wider part of society, not just the racing industry. And I think Giles made the salient point that this is to try and safeguard the industry as well moving forward. But I think the most pressing issue and the reason why this has been announced now is to give the industry as much hope as and chance of getting crowds back. If we're going to have fully vaccinated crowds only allowed back this carnival, the participants need to be vaccinated as well.
And as Giles said, this isn't a one-out thing that racing's doing. He knows well, and I think everyone else, you mentioned to him about Crown Casino, this is all going to start tumbling now. I mean, within days, this is going to be pretty much an across-the-board set of protocols for all sorts of businesses. So, yeah.
It would be interesting to see what the reaction is from New South Wales, Racing Australia, and other principal racing jurisdictions, whether this also is something that flows through. And in other major sports, what they have done is not instituted a mandatory vaccination, and this is a unique industry, as Giles did say, but that they've made it virtually impossible for you to participate and compete in those other sports if you are not vaccinated with the increased restrictions that are placed on them. So I think it's a bold move. I personally am a supporter of it. I think we need to have as much safety as possible for everyone and the industry as a whole to ensure that we don't stop racing, which we've been able to do it so successfully over the last couple of years. Mm. Hey, just the other big story, and we thought this would be the main talking point, was the release of the weights yesterday. What did you think? 55.5 kilos incentivised and the other weights that were put out by Giles? By Greg Carpenter.
Well, some might say the 55.5 was done by Giles. I'm not an expert in the rationale of the ratings and how they equate. And obviously, as Bray Sokolsky said to you earlier, like this is Greg Carpenter's wheelhouse and it's all justifiable and it all makes sense and so on. But it just seems to me that this is a horse who we'd never heard of 3 months ago, who was winning at Ipswich and Toowoomba and then Eagle Farm, who suddenly with one Group 1 win in what is basically a pathway Group 1. So it's a Group 1 that could easily be a Group 2, the Mackay Divas Stakes, if you think about it in those terms, who has suddenly gone from zero to hero when it comes to the weights. And say if he wins the Caulfield Cup with 55.5, say he wins it well, then he's basically pretty much weighted out of the Melbourne Cup, I would imagine. Say he gets a kilo or a kilo and a half with enough internationals to make it a serious contest, then is incentivised actually weighted out of the Melbourne Cup if he wins the Caulfield Cup? And I did speak to Moods this morning, who said, look, to be honest, these are all issues, he said, but at the moment we're only focusing on winning the Caulfield Cup and then we'll worry about the aftermath. He has always said that the Cox Plate's not off the table. Bray Sokolsky and I think Aussie Kira are of the same view, and it would be a hell of a clash. And there is that northerly precedent, and there is the fact that incentivised has got a history of backing up well too. So I would imagine that what might happen if he wins the Caulfield Cup well, and this is presuming he does, I've never known an early crow greater than what we're expecting from this horse. This could all come crashing down. But say he does win the Turnbull well and the Caulfield Cup well, and he pulls up well, Moody's a pretty, you know, he's not a scared trainer. He's not scared to back him up either. And I wouldn't be surprised, I don't know what you think, if it goes Caulfield Cup, have a bit of a think about it. There's a bit of a will he, won't he, maybe run in the Cox Plate, and then it doesn't matter. Because Mood says, I know we can run 2,400, but I don't know we can run 3,200. So I wonder whether the Melbourne Cup might be the long shot now of the three big races, and that the Cox Plate might be, you know, tens into fours, you know, something like that.
He'll run in a Melbourne Cup if he's going well. That's the sole aim of the owners, to win the Melbourne Cup. But there is a possibility, if he performs well, that he could go through a Cox Plate. We'll wait and see what happens after.
We saw with Russian Camelot last year what the effect can be of going one run too far. Like if this horse becomes a weight for age champion and they start thinking about ARCs and Hong Kong and Japan and he wins a Caulfield Cup and a Cox Plate, I see no sense in crucifying him in a Melbourne Cup just for the hell of having a runner.
Yeah, but that's why I think it's more unlikely than likely he'll end up in a Cox Plate, because this is the year that he'll go Caulfield Melbourne Cup and then come back next year for a weight for age race like
that. Was under the assumption before yesterday that he was going to be well weighted. I think the owners now think that. Yeah.
Let's ask Greg Carpenter, who's going to join us in a moment, what type of penalty he could get for a Melbourne Cup if he does indeed win a Caulfield Cup. Just on the jockey cases yesterday, Mark Zara. I think we're seeing a pattern emerge now as to what the thought process is from the Racing Tribunal.
Yeah, and it's Mark Zara was unsuccessful in his appeal against the 3 months. And basically the quote from Judge Bowman was, we're of the opinion a penalty of 3 months suspension is fair, reasonable and appropriate. Indeed, some people might consider it quite merciful. So I think Judge Bowman almost reined himself in to just maintain the 3 month penalty with that sort of language. And of course, Ben Malam and Ethan Brown are appealing their 3 months on Thursday, and Mark Zara also got 2 months, but it's only a month because part of it has been suspended for the misleading evidence about his attendance at the Airbnb. So it now appears absolutely dead set obvious that Malam and Brown will not get any reprieve on their appeal from their 3 months based on the Zara precedent. There doesn't seem to be any real difference, really, between what their situation is with their appeal and Mark Zara's. I don't know whether they can still withdraw their appeals because there seems to be absolutely no point in conducting them. And I guess they run some risk of, you know, the whim of the VRT in whether they apply their exercise their right, the VRT, to increase the penalty.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a fait accompli now from what we're seeing. Jamie Carr as well, and also Mellum and
Brown. Jamie Carr's 11 o'clock this morning regarding the false and misleading, so we'll have a little bit of news on that a little bit later on.
And just touching on the COVID sanctions, the two trainers that we spoke about yesterday, they were hit with some pretty heavy fines.
Yeah, it was an interesting situation where Craig Carmody and John Thompson, the stewards were firmly of the belief that the trainers inadvertently just did not understand the COVID protocols, even though the information had been pretty much rammed home about the concern, the LGAs of concern by the state government every day, and also by direct communication between Mark Van Gestel, the chief steward, and all the participants. But having said that, the stewards accepted that the trainers inadvertently breached the COVID rules by leaving their residences in LGAs of concern and attending track work and races at Randwick, which is the only kind of COVID pristine area at the moment where life is not in severe lockdown. So they were fined 25, reduced to 18,750, I think it was, each, on the basis that the stewards accepted that it wasn't a deliberate breach, but they've still been whacked almost 20,000 each. And I think if those people are looking for, well, what's the difference between the COVID breach of the Airbnb jockeys and the ACT jockey situation, is that it is established with the other ones that it was a deliberate breach, and the Sydney stewards are comfortable that it was an inadvertent breach by Carmody and Thompson.
Matty, just to round out the news, Matty Welsh has done some really good forums on professional punters and the punting landscape on .com the last couple of nights. And last night, Aaron Morrison, the CFO, he made an announcement a lot of punters will be pretty happy about, and that's the standardisation of deductions for scratching. So it won't be brought in straight away, but this is what Aaron Morrison had to say.
There'll be a system where RV is going to be calculating and distributing the deduction values for all scratched runners. And it'll be based on a published price deductions table. We'll leverage the VOP, and we're also going to see the deductions will also apply to the emergency runners as well. So it's a great system, a lot of consultation with all parts of the industry, and we're really pleased to be able to get that going.
I think it's about time. I think a lot of the corporates have been taking the mickey out of the amount of deductions that they have. So the standardised deduction will give a lot more clarity to punters, and I think it's a lot more fair for everyone in the game.
Absolutely. Just one little one. Well, not little. It's actually quite big to see how this will play out. That the Victorian Parliament, this is a small report that I read this morning, is set to support a call for a national reform to the whipping rules in horse racing. The Animal Justice Party's MP, Andy Medic, called for a ban of the whip, and that was actually supported by Martin Pakula in Parliament yesterday, but it does require the Racing Australia situation to crank into gear as far as progressing these sort of reforms. But interesting that the Victorian Parliament is of the view that the whip's got to go.
Interesting, I read that. It's a big headline, and when you delve deeper into it, you're right in what you say. Martin Pakula supported the motion, as did the majority of the Victorian government, but it doesn't actually mean anything can be instituted, because again, it needs to go back through Racing Victoria, and it's a push, more pressure, if you like, to try and get a national approach, which once again is being clogged up by Racing Australia and the lack of Racing New South Wales wanting to meet and discuss anything.
I guess it does at least confirm that Giles Thompson's not out on a limb. I think everyone's perceived that the whip reform agenda has basically been driven by Giles Thompson and his personal agenda. But this does indicate that the Racing Minister is also singing from the same song sheet regarding whip reform, and that, you know, it's not just a one-man's mission type thing. So that's an interesting suggestion of support for the whip reform.
A lot of SMSs have come through, and the overwhelming majority is in favour of the mandatory vaccination, which has been announced. A few of the SMSs are saying, I work in the industry, I'm all unhappy, I'm double vaxxed. There's a lot of people in the industry more than happy to do it if it helps protect our jobs. There's a couple saying that it's too much of a imposition to force this on people, but probably 80-20, I would say, on the SMSs we've got are in full support of the decision that's been made.
The 20 that are against, if they're industry participants, what do they think their options are, I wonder? I wonder what they think they'll do now. So it's going to be interesting.
This is a decision a lot of people will have to make, and it won't just be in racing. We're seeing that in all industries where there is hospitality, in the airline industries, that if you want to work in some jobs moving forward, there's no option but to get fully vaccinated.
I spoke to a leading trainer this morning about this situation in general, and he said, well, I've got a bloke who's been in the game for 40 years who's... former jockey who's a very strong anti-vaxxer. And I said, well, what do you think happens now? He says, well, I guess he's out of a job. So it will be interesting to see how this plays out.
Matty, we'll read all about it, rsn.net.au. Don't go anywhere. More to come after this, including your questions. Send them through. What do you want to ask the handicapper, Greg Carpenter, after he released the weights for both the Caulfield and Melbourne Cup yesterday?